Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of the new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS.
Add touch to your MacBook for a dollar. Learn to play guitar with LEDs and NanoLeaf's color-changing light panel. Live from Twit, it's the new screensaver.
Thank you to Adi for doing the open. Welcome to the new Screensavers. This is episode 154, recorded Saturday, April 28th, 2018. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Rich DeMuro. Thanks for having me back, by the way.
Absolutely. It's good to have you back, man.
It's good to be back. This is a great place, by the way. You guys have, like, a dream job here.
It's fun. Well, and prior to this, you did what you did last time. You were the tech guy. No pressure.
No pressure to sit in Leo's chair. I mean, come on. Oh, my gosh. What a cool studio he has. But, yeah, we did the radio show. Now yeah. I'm doing this. So I come up for 2 days and just kind of get the most out of it.
So I have to ask because I've never been the tech guy or even the replacement tech guy. And that's okay. Only from the perspective of, like, sitting in that chair for 3 hours and getting questions. Like, that you have no idea what you're going to get asked, right? Well, like, what's that pressure like? Or is there any pressure associated with it?
No, there's two things. First off, you know, you got a call screener. So, yeah. Kim, I mean, that she helps. Looked... So, yeah. You see kind Absolutely. Of... You have an idea of some of the calls. And believe me, Leo, he is willing to tackle even the most, you know, tiny... you know, detail questions kind yeah. of things. Me, I'm much more looking at them. I'm like, I think I understand this one. So I definitely choose questions I think I know the answers to.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also fun because you kind of, you know, with the internet and all this stuff, you can research. I mean, I don't know.
That's cool.
There is no answer, really. You just kind of have to wing it.
Yeah, basically. You kind of go along. And,
yeah. And if you don't know, you're like, good question.
Let me know what you come up with and then give us a call back next week.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, you're doing an awesome job, obviously. With the tech guy, and it's great to have you back here, man.
Keeps you on your toes, that's for sure. You don't,
yeah.
But you also, one thing, you don't realize how much you know about tech until you do something like that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because you know, you're doing this stuff every day.
Yeah.
You don't talk about every single little nuance of using these devices and stuff in
right.
a detailed manner.
So. Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. Well, we've got a lot of really cool stuff to show off. I don't know, you know, maybe you see some in the background. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, everyone is doing it except... For Apple, we're going to touch base with an MIT student who has figured out how to turn a MacBook Pro into a touchscreen Mac with a little device that costs a dollar.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
And Megan Maroney is going to show us the modular smart light system from NanoLeaf.
Excellent. I saw those actually in the office, and every time that they're on, like, I want them on my wall. I don't know if that's where they're supposed to go, but they look really cool.
Okay.
This is like the light show, because I'm also going to show off something you can see in the background. That's my guitar, but it's blinking at you. And that's because it has something called Fret Zealot installed on it. And it's really cool. It's kind of like a flashy LED strip for a guitar that also will teach you how to play guitar. And I'm going to see if I can teach you how to play guitar, Rich.
We will see. I have not played guitar before.
Okay? Perfect.
So if this works, I will buy it.
Yeah, that's what makes for good TV, is if you've never played before.
Oh, yeah. The best TV is just watching a moron try to play guitar. Yeah. We're going to answer a call for help about choosing the right Android phone. That's going to be a great question. Plus, we're going to answer more of your questions in the mailbag.
But before we do that, it's time for Hot Topics. A couple of news stories that we've been following throughout the week. And I thought we'd kind of start off with Amazon, because I feel like... Well, I mean, of all the really big technology companies, Facebook, Google, Amazon, they almost always have like this steady stream of news in a single week.
Always.
And so I mean, any of them probably could have fit into this category, but Amazon did something that really moved it up to the top. It changed the pricing structure of Amazon Prime. But it did.
No, the last time they changed it was 4 years ago. It used to be $99. Now it's up to $119 starting on, what is it? It's May 16th for the new customer. May 11th for the new customers.
That's right.
June 16th for existing customers. My renewal date is the 26th of December, by the way.
Oh, so you've got some time.
Well, but it's the worst possible time. It's after I'm literally spent from all my Christmas shopping, and then Amazon's like, by the way, can I get an extra $120 from you? I'm like, okay, fine.
Well, you know about it in advance, I suppose, so that gives you
some
time. No,
it always surprises me. Every single year, I'm just like, oh, what's this $120? Well, $100 from Amazon.
So that means when you first signed up for Prime, you were like a latecomer. You were looking in retrospect and going, wow, I spent a lot of money on Amazon on Christmas this year. I should really do this right now. But
the way I remember it is that I literally signed up the first day Prime was available. Can we figure out when Amazon Prime launched? Because I was like, I was paying, I think it was $59 a year or $79. I don't know what. It was really cheap.
I mean, it's come
it
up
just keeps, it's like cable TV.
Right.
It just keeps creeping up.
2005.
I was in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Okay.
And I was a reporter down there, and I was like, I can't believe this company is going to ship us stuff second day. Because back then, remember when shipping, it was like, you know, to get the second day shipping, it was like $40-$50 for something.
Yeah, and I mean, ordering anything online, you were just assuming that you were going to pay a hefty, you know, extra fee for shipping. I mean, tack on, you know, $5, $8, depending on where you're talking about, dollars. And then to think that Amazon was just going to let you get second day all the time. And now we've gotten so used to it, right? Like, we're so accustomed to this idea that we're going to get things a couple of days later. That's why Amazon is the behemoth that it is.
So do you think that with this $119, I feel like it's the first time people are going to think about that fee. Even though when you do the math, for me last year, it was $1 per shipment.
Yeah.
So, and this year it would be like $1.15. You know, based on how many orders I place.
Yep.
Do you think people are going to think about what they're spending and say, maybe I'll not renew?
I'm sure there's a percentage of people that will. But ultimately, like, I think everybody that is a Prime user, like, one of the magical things about what Amazon has is that Prime users love being a Prime user.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of pride's probably not the right word, but of all the things that you spend a lot of money on online, I don't know if I've met many people that have been like, I don't know why I pay for Prime. Like, everybody loves the
this
fact
year
that
you will meet
Prime.
Those people.
Maybe. I mean, but it's $20, which I guess, you know, anytime fees go up, you question it. Netflix does this and you're like, well, I don't know. Is an extra dollar, you know, a month worth it for the streaming video? But for the most part, people stick around because they like it for a reason.
Here's where I think all these new companies have an advantage over the old companies. So when they used to raise your price for something, it would be like a bill you got and you saw it and you're like, oh, this is now this much. Nowadays, it's all on your credit card and it's all automatic. These automatic.
So Netflix, you're staring at it.
Yeah. Exactly. So it may take you 3 months to realize that your costs went up. In my case with Amazon, like, I see the bill like, you know, 30 days after it gets charged. By that time, what are you going to do? Call them up and be like, I don't want to pay the $119 for all the stuff you shipped me over the holiday season.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you've got options too. There are other ways to kind of get around this if you like. There's a household feature where you can add people to your household and kind of share the cost that way. $59 a month if you're a .edu student, if you're a student with a .edu email address. So you can shave off some money that way. Also, they have options for, you know, lower cost households, $5.99 a month for qualified EBT and Medicaid customers. So they have other ways that you can kind of, you know, get in there. If you want to just pay monthly for only the month that you need it, you can drop in there for like $12.99.
Which is kind of funny. So you pay $12.99 a month, which times 12 months is more.
Right.
But people like that monthly cost.
Yeah,
you know,
drop in when
yearly.
You need it, drop out when you don't. That's kind of how I treat my TV is
a lot
I
of
use
these,
YouTube TV one of those services. Drop in when the Olympics are starting. Pay for that single month, and I never watch TV anytime else, so I drop out of it. So same kind of idea. So other things that Amazon is up to before we kind of move along, Amazon Echo Dot Kids. Apparently there's a kids edition now. So if you, like, in our household, we're Google Home, and we have the Google Home Minis in our kids' room, and they love it. You know, they play music on it and everything. But I do wish that it had some of these features. You know, things like explicit song filtering, which you can do on Google Home, bedtime limits. It's disabled the voice purchase option, which is probably a good thing.
It's a smart thing to have disabled on your kids. My thing is, you know, for the kids thing, I love that they do the please. If your kids say please to Alexa, it'll reward them for that.
Oh, really?
Like, it actually likes, yeah, so it likes when they use, like, please and thank you. And I've noticed when my kids talk to, by the way, in my house were Siri, Alexa, and Google, because I can't decide. So my kids, like, in my car, they'll be like, are you using Alexa today? Or, well, Siri or Google.
Right.
And so they have different ways of talking to them. And then my kids will actually wonder, they'll be like, what if, like, Siri was Google's grandma? Like, they have, like, they literally have these, like, scenarios that are going through the, you know, my six-year-old's mind, and I'm just like, it's a weird one.
I can see them, instead of playing with action figures or dolls, they've got, like, a Google Home Mini in one hand and an Echo Dot in the other, and then, yeah.
Siri doesn't know the answer to this. Yeah.
Siri wins. And then finally, apparently, and we kind of experienced this already, went through these growing pains with Google Home, always listening, but security researchers discovered that they could create a, well, it was seemingly harmless, a skill that would ultimately stay recording audio long after the skill had been deactivated or turned off.
That's not nice.
They notified Amazon. Amazon, you know, did they fixed the issue, but it was possible. So I don't know if that changes anybody's feelings on their home assistants or not.
I don't think so. I think the idea that we're inviting a microphone into our houses, you know, it's pretty amazing that people are accepting that in a mass way.
Yeah, that's because they do some really cool things.
They do.
I don't know if it's a worthy trade-off, but apparently, I mean, myself included, apparently we're okay with that.
I think so.
Yeah. Other news, Snapchat. Did you ever get this for the first spectacles?
I did. You know, I'm kind of not... what's the word? It's like bullish or bearish, whatever the negative one is. That's me on Snapchat with these spectacles.
You're bearish, yeah.
But I will say, with the new version, which are now water resistant, they're kind of thinner, better profile, better quality, faster transfers, higher price tag.
Yep, $20 more.
Yeah, so $150 versus $130. I don't know. I'm actually quite tempted to purchase these.
Are you a regular Snapchat?
No, not at all. I don't even have it on my phone. And I tried it for a week after reading Gary Vaynerchuk's book about, you know, just being everywhere all the time. And I'm like, all right, I'm all in. And I'm like, okay, nobody cares about what I'm doing 24/7, right? but I do think it's really interesting. On all the promo videos for this, if you watch their little YouTube video, they show a lot of parents with kids. And so I can definitely see now they're kind of trying to reach that new market of, hey, your kid is always doing cool, interesting, weird things. Why don't you capture it with these glasses? And now they look better than before. I don't know. I might be sold on them. I think I'm going to purchase them.
Yeah, I mean, I completely identify with that. And usually when spectacles comes up, this you know, I referenced this, but way back when Google Glass was a thing, I stayed home with my then, well, she was 1 year old, my one-year-old daughter at the time. She's now five. And I put on Google Glass. I was staying home with her because she was sick, and I just had this feeling that she was going to take her first steps. And sure enough, I was able to put on my Google Glass and record from my perspective, her taking her first steps walking towards me. So I get it. If they're like doubling down on that as the message, as one of the ways to sell spectacles, that's a really great way to do it, because parents immediately identify with just what a great time capsule reward that is to be able to re-experience these magical moments that your kids are going through in a way that reminds you of not just the fact that it happened, but seeing it through your eyes once again, which is what I get when I go back to that video. I'm like, I remember being there, and I see, it's almost like a straight feed for my eyes watching her walk towards me. So it's a great reason for these to exist. Do you think they're going to be more successful because they had a lot of unsold stock on Spectacles?
Yeah, which is kind of interesting, because the last one, all the stories said they had to dump all this old stock that sat in a warehouse. Apparently they reused some of the parts for the new ones.
Okay.
I heard that. I don't know. I think that the interest is there. If the technology is better and it transfers better and all this stuff, I don't know. If I go to a birthday party and I start seeing parents wearing these things, I'm just going to be like, all right, I don't know. I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah, I hear you. Although I have to, like, yet again, remember to my Google Glass days. And there was a time where I went to my daughter's preschool for a gymnastics performance.
Sure, and you got kicked out because they're like, you look way too weird.
This was before the backlash. It was before the backlash, you know, because there was suddenly there was that big glass backlash. And it was before that. Yes, they probably called it that. And I did feel weird, but I got the whole thing, you know, with Google Glass wearing it. So I was that guy.
So you have from
among
when
parents
kids,
wearing them.
When your kids were like 0 to 3, you have the grainiest VGA videos of your kids doing all kinds of amazing things.
Yes.
That when they're like 27, they're going to watch it on these like 16K TVs, yes, and it's going to take up like one corner.
Yeah, it's the size of a stamp.
Perfect.
Basically.
So you did well.
See? I was a forward thinker.
Good parenting
back in my day. And finally, so this is a weird story, okay? A decades-old cold case is apparently solved, and it's all thanks to an online genealogy site called GED Match, which I had never heard of the site GED Match. But basically, the Golden State Killer, you've probably already heard about this because it's made a lot of news, also known as the original Night Stalker, East Bay Rapist, whole lot of horrible, terrible things, terrorized California between 1974 to 1986. Well, apparently, investigators were able to pull, they had the DNA from one of the murders like 40 years ago,
mm-hmm,
and they decided to run that through GED Match's online analysis tool. It's a free service. Anyone can go in there, and from what I understand, the idea is that if you use any of these other genealogy sites, you can actually export the raw data from that and upload it here. And because it's free, the idea is that everybody takes their results, uploads them up, and you might find more matches that way.
Right. It's kind of like an open source DNA match site.
Right.
I did mine on, DNA Ancestry, DNA.
Okay.
And I heard what I was reading from Ancestry and the other one, 23andMe.
Sure.
They don't really share the data with people, especially law enforcement, unless it's like super, important. Like they get like a warrant for it.
Right.
But this is kind of like everyone uploads. And
right.
So anyone, and not only that, anyone is free to kind of slice and dice this information for research or just personal. So this is really crazy because if you think from this guy's standpoint, the serial killer that they found, did he ever think that whatever he discarded something, like something in a trash, like they tracked him for a while because they had an idea that it was him and were able to match it up with this stuff that they found here.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just wild.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And it wasn't a direct match to him. It was a direct match to some of his, one of his relatives.
Right.
And that then kind of goes back to this idea of, it's kind of like Cambridge Analytica in a sense. It's this idea that even we might not be sharing something online. Someone in his family went onto this site and shared their DNA, and that was enough of a link to pull the investigators in that direction. There's so many ways that our information, whether we're sharing it or whether someone else is sharing their information and how that crosses with our information, so many ways that this stuff can be cross-matched and obviously you can catch a cold case killer.
You got to understand from his standpoint, it probably would have been pretty awkward if he was like, look, friends and family, please don't share
your
DNA.
Could you not do that? Yeah,
because
totally.
I just don't, there might be some sketchy past in my history. I just don't want that out there.
So just, I'm just saying, if you just hypothetically speaking,
burn all your straws. Whatever you touch with your mouth, just make sure it's incinerated because I don't want my DNA anywhere. This is just probably one of the most unique uses of kind of an online website DNA storage that I've ever heard of in my life.
Absolutely. And just crazy that it was the solution for a 40-year case. And such a big one at that. I mean, this really had them stumped for a very long time. So that's a few things that we've been kind of tracking before we kind of dive into the rest of the really cool stuff. It all has kind of strangely, this show is very light focused. So you'll see as we go along. Before we get into that, we're going to thank the sponsor of today's episode of the new Screensavers, and that's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you've gotten a mortgage yourself or you're thinking about getting one or you know someone that has, you might already know that the mortgage experience is not the easiest thing in the world. It's been dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. It's all based on your income, your assets, your credit, and Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify
and then find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, all you have to do is go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. That's rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. And now, we're going to head over and take a look at a MacBook with a touch screen.
What?
Yeah, it exists. And it's right over here. Let's head on over and take a look. We're going to talk with Kevin Kwok.
What's up?
Yeah. We're going to take a look at this.
How do you have a MacBook with a touch screen? Because I think my kids think my MacBook has a touch screen, and they're just hitting it.
And that's why all the fingerprints on your display. Oh. I didn't want to say anything, but you brought it up, so.
You know, I try to clean it every once in a while. I did clean it the other day, actually, and I couldn't believe how. I was like, this looks like a new computer.
Wow, I need to do this more often. So the most important question is, how dirty does your display get now that you're touching it all the time?
So there's a certain field of view where the touchable region is like this. So if I turn down the brightness, you could see there's just a triangle of smudges.
So it's like those when people put in their passcodes, you know, and you can like read it. It's like your computer. We know your passcode right now.
So this is really cool. All right. So let's take a step back a little bit. First of all, Kevin Kwok, thank you for hopping in with us today and showing us kind of the technology and where you are right now with bringing touchscreen to a MacBook Pro. And, you know, we've shown it off a little bit on screen. It's a work in progress, I would say, at this point, right? Tell us a little bit about the project, kind of where you got the idea for it and why.
So I had the idea first when I was in middle school. This was like 8 years ago. I just saw these TED Talks where people were talking about multi-touch and this new thing called the iPhone. And I thought this was really cool, and I wanted my own because obviously I couldn't afford an iPhone or like Microsoft's Surface.
Yep.
So I nagged on my mom. We went to the arts and crafts store, and I got pieces of plastic, little bits of mirror, and I sort of tried putting them together and trying to figure out if there was a way to build a touchscreen. Like, the normal ways for building it involved lasers and complicated optics, and I didn't have access to any of that and couldn't afford any of that. So I had this idea of sort of recognize that if you're putting your finger against a mirror, you can tell that you're touching the surface of the mirror if your finger looks like it's touching its own reflection.
Wow. Okay. And you came up with that in eighth, or was this later?
Yeah, this was in eighth grade.
Wow. You know, I wasn't doing that kind of stuff in eighth grade.
You guys playing video games.
so when did you get, you know, okay, so well, tell me what it is now. So how did you go from there to actually building this little device?
I told a couple of my friends at college about this idea, and they were like, you know, Apple doesn't for some reason, they spearheaded this whole touchscreen revolution, but they never added it to their Macs. So how about you just take one of those tiny craft mirrors, a paperclip or something, and then attach it to your monitor? And they came up with this idea to, just bring it to laptops. And so we did this about, a year ago, with my teammates Guillermo Webster, Anisha Athley, and Logan Engstrom. They couldn't make it today, but.
And so it's a little. Is that a mirror up there?
Yep,
that's a mirror connected with a paperclip.
It's about 6 inches of wire and some scotch tape
that you coiled. And what's the scotch tape do?
It attaches the wire to the mirror.
Oh, that sounds like a good function for scotch tape.
Wait a minute, it tapes it?
Wait, it tapes
this
it to
is
the...
revolutionary.
Hold on. Okay, so, and it's, what's it actually doing? So it's taking the reflection, or it's kind of, it's aiming the camera back into itself?
Yeah, so I can open up Photo Booth, and you can see what the computer sees.
You
can see, basically the, turn on the...
So that's a
So you could see, it sees the screen, and if I put my finger here, you could see both my finger and its reflection. And you can tell that, here, because it's sort of not touching, you know that I'm not touching the screen, but here you know that it is. And with this concept, you can extract, with a little bit of math, three coordinates, the X, Y, and Z axes, out of a 2D image.
See, I knew there was something complicated about this. Okay, you got to know, like, math axes. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, on one hand, it's one thing to create the piece of hardware, you know, which, I mean, we were showing the walkthrough on how to make it. Anyone could make this.
Yeah.
It's very easy. Are you encouraging people to kind of experiment and make it themselves?
Yeah. I think because it's such a simple idea, and the real idea is just that you can use reflections to get additional bits of information from pictures.
Right.
And you could use this for art installations, for, like, smart boards, like, large touch screens. You could probably do it for, like, there's a lot of things that you could probably use this idea for.
Sure. So on one hand, you've got the hardware. The other side is the software aspect, and like, how was that? I mean, it almost makes it seem like the hardware is the easy part.
Yeah,
coming up with the software that actually does what you were talking about, Rich, you know, the complicated math that's involved in doing this, that had to be a big challenge.
Yeah, and it's still a work in progress. Like, you'll probably see soon enough that the software doesn't work all that well.
Well, there's apps that have been around for years, like on the on the App Store, that still crash. So, I mean, we understand with this. So show us, can you show us a demo of kind of what this is good for? Okay, so this is, what are we seeing right here?
So this is the software that sort of gives you an internal look at how, like, what's going on.
Can
see these like weird lines represent the calibration points, and you can see it highlights my finger, and when it recognizes that there's a point in between, when it recognizes that there's a reflection and my finger, it draws that tiny little purple dot, and it does all the like weird math and figures out where on the screen, in the screen's coordinates, my finger is, and that's where it draws the big yellow dot. And if I enable a mouse mode, it starts acting as basically a mouse driver. And so it will, as you can see, move my cursor around and simulate click events.
Ah, neat. Okay. So, so obviously this is working off of reflection. That's the prime kind of driver of this technology. How does it know the difference between, you know, a reflection of a finger and a reflection of everything else?
Well, so fortunately there aren't that many other things.
Does it work with faces?
Well, I mean, but you can see right there.
Does it work with a nose?
Like,
let's say.
Like, there aren't many other things that get that close unless you're rich and you put your nose on your screen all the time. but I mean, there are things that are appearing there, like these little like random reflections. How does it know not to act on those?
Basically, it has a couple of pretty silly heuristics. They don't work super well, but like, it works enough for rejecting most of the noise. So I can open up, here's a little app. It's a like little online piano.
One of my favorites.
On Google.
Rich is really good at playing the JavaScript piano.
I have this bookmarked.
So you can play the piano with your finger.
Well, sort of.
So I've never, I do this at work all the time, my downtime. I'm like, how can I play this darn piano with my fingers, because I'm always like using the keyboard on
one wants to do that.
So now you have made it possible.
Yeah. So, you could see, like, pressing little buttons, it sort of kind of recognizes where it is and plays the notes.
That's doing pretty good.
This is amazing. That is so cool.
An angle of the finger, like, do you have to be dead on?
You don't have
straight
to be totally
on
dead
for
on.
It to...
And some fingers work better. Like, I noticed mine has a pretty good contact point.
You said it. You said it.
Now I said it. It stopped working. Murphy's law of you know, DIY
demos on TV is once you say it's working perfectly for me, it stops.
What do you see as the future for this? Is this technology that can be? I mean, you said like the art installations, that kind of stuff. Is this something that can be monetized? Is it something that you see will be built into bigger ideas in the future?
I'm not sure it should be monetized. Like, I think what makes it so special is that really anyone can make it, and I feel like it'd be better if we could, like, see this kind of technology, this idea, being used for a bunch of different things in the future.
So it's like almost like Google Cardboard, you know? Like, you buy that on Amazon or, you know, for, like, $5, and you see what you do with it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, so it's like the paperclip instead of cardboard.
So you would have a little kit with everything you need. A piece of tape, a paper clip, and a tiny mirror.
Yep.
A
and maybe a flash drive with the software on it. Where can people kind of find the software if they're building these on their
it's
own?
It's on GitHub. So you can go to github.com/bijection/Sistine. It's called Sistine because one of our first demos was this picture of...
Michelangelo's
creation of Adam touching God and a touchscreen.
And you can be the third person in that for the very first time. So you're talking about how easy and you know this is for anyone to use and how that's kind of the approach. Do you have any plans to take this and prototype it, to more kind of complete level, or is it always meant to kind of be DIY fashion?
We've looked into this. For a while, like I mentioned in the beginning, there's the triangular smudge pattern.
Right.
So I couldn't, for instance, X out of an app by clicking on the top right corner.
No spotlight for you.
Spotlight for me.
Yeah.
One way of getting around to that would be to have some sort of curved mirror so it could have a wider field of view.
Sure.
And so we looked a little bit into what it would take to fabricate one of these. Seems like it's kind of expensive, and we sort of gave up on that, but if there's enough interest, maybe we might continue.
Okay.
Certainly if there's someone who's interested in sort of taking up this project and going that extra mile, then I would love to be able to help.
Awesome.
So Apple, next MacBook comes out with a touchscreen. Is life over? What's the deal?
I'm out of a dollar.
Oh, no.
How
not
are
too
you
much
ever
going to live?
I love this. This is so great. I love that we have people like you that are doing stuff like this. Because me, I would be like, I don't even understand my webcam. So I just love the idea that you're like, what can I do with this in eighth grade? And now you've made this stand. This is amazing.
Turn it into something. And it also has the added benefit of being a security cover for your webcam.
Yeah.
When you're using it, anyways. Now, I have to say that when we were kind of getting set up to start the show, I went to sit down on this chair, and I almost sat on a turtle.
Yes.
And normally, that's not weird. but I was told to ask about the turtle. So I'm asking about the turtle. What's the turtle all about?
So this is a turtle that if you ask Google's Inception V3 network, it will say with really high confidence that this is actually a rifle. What we've done, this was made by much of the same people as the touchscreen, Anish Athley, Logan Engstrom, and Andrew Ilias. And this is a 3D, what's called an adversarial example. And an adversarial example is a object or an image such that when you run it through a black box neural classifier, it does not what you expect. So to any human being, this is pretty clearly a turtle.
Yes.
If you pay close enough attention, there's some subtle variation in color some subtle warping of these patterns.
Okay.
And this sort of constitutes an optical illusion for many of these neural networks. And so it loses the ability to understand what it's seeing.
Is it just making a guess, or
it's even worse than making a guess. It's actively deceived. It doesn't even think that it's a turtle.
This has pretty big implications. If let's say I'm a security company and I have laser cameras that kind of scan the crowd for something, would this mean that someone in the future would have a gun that is an adversarial, whatever you called it?
Yeah. So
and it's tricking my system?
It's almost like it's its own type of camouflage, really.
It's an open problem in AI research that nobody knows how to get rid of to create networks that are robust against these adversarial examples.
What is it about this? Is it the coloring? Is it the shading? Like, why does it trick it?
That's kind of an open research question. Some people have some, mathy guesses, but
it comes back to math again.
Yeah, sorry.
See, I'm just
very filled with math. We're all confused. No. Yeah. Well, that's strange. So,
But there is some sort of knowledge of what's going on here because you're able to create an object that actively does it. So how did you get there? Like to know, well, we can create this and it's going to trick it into, you know, seeing a rifle.
So this is kind of the like double-edged sword of deep learning, which is deep learning is built on these constructs that are differentiable, which means you can run them either forwards or backwards. And so you start with a network which is completely randomly initialized, and then you change this network, you tweak the weights until it starts classifying this as a turtle, like it starts classifying things correctly. But the other thing you can do is rather than changing the weights, you can keep the weights fixed and instead tweak the image. And you can tweak the image under the condition that your perturbations are very subtle, which is what's happening here. So we try to minimize the difference between this and a reference turtle, but somehow maximally confuse the network. And because of the way neural networks are just structured, you can do this. And you can, like, build these types of objects.
You can do this.
Does it have to be a turtle?
No.
Can you do this with, I mean, this is just kind of a proof of concept, but can you apply, and would it be a different gradation and shading and things if it was a different object?
Yeah, so this idea affects all of deep learning. So you can create objects, but more sinisterly, you can create audio snippets that to you just sound like wind, but to Alexa sounds like Echo buy $1,000 worth of sand.
If you're a parent, you've actually done that before, which is kind of sad.
I think what this does is it makes the case for not just kids, but everyone to get that Kids Edition Echo Dot and turn off
the new Kids Edition Echo Dot with the sinister mode turned off.
Yes.
If there's sinister audio in your house, we will reject it. No problem.
Wow, that is nuts. And I mean, obviously, this is a really big issue that needs to be figured out. Doesn't look like we're anywhere near a solution or really understanding, which is not a very comforting thought, to be honest. Especially considering how much everything in technology seems to be doubling down on artificial intelligence, and neural networks to solve the world's problems. In air quotes.
Yeah.
Wow. So would this be the same thing in like Google Photos of like how it categorizes things and it kind of gets tricked sometimes? Is that similar problem?
Yeah. So there is there's a good chance that Google's using a very similar, if not the same, network. So if you snapped a picture of this, there's a decent chance that it would show up in your rifle collection.
Interesting. I'm going to do that when I get my camera back.
This is all fascinating stuff. They're entirely different. I'm sure you guys are working on other projects.
Yeah.
What else you got going on, Cooper?
Well. Lots of things, but with the light theme.
Now we're totally off plan. None of this was planned, just so you all know.
With the light theme.
Brace yourselves.
I have this little box called the Toglo. This is actually other like recycled touchscreen technology. So the standard way for building a touchscreen, or one of the ways people did it, was with a laser and a line lens that split it off.
Right.
They typically use infrared light, but I thought it'd be kind of cooler if it were on the ground and shooting visible light. And so over there, you can see the video of just... This is actually at an AI conference where we were showing off the turtle.
Now, wait a minute. Is the light coming from their shoes or from the ground?
No, there's this box that's just lying on the ground, and it's causing everyone in the room's feet to light up.
That is pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. Do you have to have special shoes for that to work?
Nope, just white shoes.
If you were to lay down on the ground, would you be surrounded by an outline?
Yeah.
Wow, that is
and
crazy.
So this looks like off-the-shelf stuff as well?
Yeah. I 3D
really
printed
cool.
some casing, but it's like mostly off-the-shelf
and
components.
Is this it right here?
Yeah.
I mean, so you've got a little laser in here. Okay, it's 3D printed, and then this is kind of to let it level
it. Yeah.
And then is this a little computer fan?
It's just a fan, yeah.
Wow, look at that. And then a little micro USB.
Yep.
Right there.
Coming to dance club near you.
Will you do a USB-C version in the future?
Maybe.
You know, standards and all that.
Just curious.
Really cool stuff, Kevin. Thank you so much for coming on and showing us all this stuff. Where do you want people to go if they want to hop online and maybe download the software, get the plans for the camera or everything else you work on?
Yeah, so you can find the software from this on github.com/bijection/Sistine. And if you want to like follow the things that me and my friends are up to, you could
for sure you want to
at antimatter15. Yeah, and shoot me an email if you have any ideas, and it'd be great to collaborate.
Is this open source as well? Or is that...
I don't know. If people are interested, then maybe.
Yeah, that's toglo.com, G-L-O.
Very cool.
People want to check that out, because that is some pretty cool
That is
cool
very
stuff.
Cool.
You're doing some awesome stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks
Thank you, Kevin.
Me.
Really appreciate you hopping on here and showing us how you're staying busy.
Yeah.
Very busy.
Thanks for having me.
Really nice talking with you. So we played a little, what was it? It was JavaScript piano. Do you want to play some guitar, like real guitar?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to teach Rich how
you're
to
gonna
play
teach
guitar.
Me. You have to teach me because I've never played guitar.
All right. Let's head over there and I'll show you something cool that hopefully will make this whole process a little bit easier. If things go as planned, which... I will say, in my time with this product, it was a little touch and go at times. The product is really cool. It's called Fret Zealot, but it has feels early. Let's just say
okay.
that some of the software that's involved here. So, I brought my my trusty Epiphone.
So you are a musician. I mean, you just had an album come out, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, it started. So I did a Kickstarter with. So it was called Yellow Gold Fever Dreamer, and I did a Kickstarter, and it was successful. And it actually all the CDs for anyone that was backing the Kickstarter shipped out a couple of weeks ago. So Now I'm getting all the tweets of like, "Hey, check it out!" You know, taking a picture of the CD. You know, CDs. Do you know what a CD is? Because no one uses CDs anymore.
We remember those,
but it's a cool souvenir. So everybody's getting that now. So it's really great. I'm super stoked that it's finally getting in people's hands. Actually, Alex, who's holding the camera, got his today, and he pointed it out to me. So great stuff there. But Fret Zealot. So you can see from this from facing here with on the neck of the guitar, you can see that it has this whole row of LEDs and. That's kind of, I mean, this is the basis of what Fret Zealot is all about. It's $199.99, so it's a little pricey. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I feel like it's a missed opportunity. They could have called it Led Zeppelin or LED Zeppelin, but they did not, and I think I understand why. They probably would have been
probably didn't want to deal with the, with the legal implications.
No, they'd be taken to the cleaners.
Yeah.
But so it's essentially a custom strip of LEDs that's meant to fit a standard neck on a regular six-string guitar.
It looks really cool, by the way. I don't even know what it does yet, but it looks really cool.
Let's see if
so
I can...
So just the look, and I imagine if I played guitar, you can just do kind of fun little things like that.
If you were, like, playing on stage somewhere, this would be a cool kind of bonus thing to do, to install onto your guitar. It was really easy to install, actually. Anthony has a little video that I recorded. I just set up my Pixel to XL while I was, you know, getting it all set up, and, you know, I had to de-string the guitar. You could probably slide it on if the strings stayed on, but I needed to replace my strings anyway.
Oh, wow, so. You just snip them like that?
Yeah.
Oh.
You don't need them anymore. You're going to put brand new ones on. You clean, you know, clean the neck, and then you eventually just kind of start peeling the tape off of the Fret Zealot, and you want to make sure that you place it appropriately, but you get it into place and you have to, you know, kind of push it down. And one of my worries was that when it's actually installed within the frets, that it might be tall enough
Too
that it
high.
Would interfere
yeah.
with the strings, but it really doesn't. It actually sits super low, and in my testing and playing around with it, it didn't get in the way at all, which thankfully, you know, thankfully they thought that one through and they got there. And LEDs are so slim and so, you know, small as it is. It's just amazing that you can kind of do this.
And in my case, if it didn't work out with teaching me the guitar, I would just install it under my cabinets in my kitchen and just let it, you know,
add some mood lighting to your coffee maker. So you can see, so basically it's the strips of LED, and then you can see up at the top that, well, this is a little capo, so this is how you snap the electronics
to the headstock of your guitar. You can actually just, you know, screw it in, plug it into that little plug that you see there, and then in that you're looking at right and almost right now, that's the battery pack. You have that charged up. It kind of mounts to the headstock of your guitar, and that's where the brains are. Bluetooth, essentially this is how it connects to whatever phone you might be using. So there's an Android app. There's also an iOS app, and it syncs via Bluetooth. I will say that the Bluetooth connectivity was a little spotty, and to be completely honest, I will be very surprised if we get through this demo and it doesn't drop off at least once. So
what does that
that's
do?
A big issue.
What happens if it drops off?
Suddenly, yeah, the lights will disappear on the neck, or they might continue blinking. But anytime you go into the app and try and pull up a different function, nothing changes. And then you have to kind of like go through the resyncing process. Not to mention, if you happen to show the app that I have, I should have it casting. Up at the top, you can see the logo that says FretZealot and the little Bluetooth icon. It's like very tucked away and kind of hard to see up there. And so, and mind you, this is on an iPad. This may be more meant for an iPhone than an iPad, but it's really hard to know when your Bluetooth disappears. You know
so
what I mean?
Make that indicator larger.
It's just suddenly everything stops working. And if depending on what screen you're in, you don't have that readout and you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? And you kind of have to figure it out. So kind of walking through the app real quick, and then I promise we're going to put this guitar on you and I'm going to teach you a couple of things. There's three sections to the FretZealot app. There is play, which I'm not going to go too far into. I mean, I'll show you. You can do a search for a song or you can add favorites. Smoke on the Water or House of the Rising Sun.
What's the library like with the songs?
I did a search for Nirvana. Nothing.
Oh, well, they're not that
big. I feel like if it's a guitar thing, you got to have some Nirvana in there. Sorry, that may be a lot to ask.
Kidding, by the way, about this.
And so basically, Nirvana. Let's see if this will even work here. If I hit play, you can see on my neck, I don't know if you can see this, but the light's flashing around. And if I kind of coordinated with the app that's showing me, you know, kind of the playing piano roll of the notes that I'm supposed to be playing in order to do House of the Rising Sun, I could over time follow these and work on it, and it would be, you know, that could be a way that I learn how to play House of the Rising Sun. So that's great. I did have a little trouble with this, though, on Android. iOS, it was maybe a little bit more straightforward. There is a guitar tuner. That's nice to have always. There is fun, which is what I showed you initially, which is you hit random and you get these little fun effects on the neck of the guitar. I can keep hitting it and go into different places, and that would be nice in a live environment, let's say. But learn is, I feel like, the strength, the real kind of the reason that you might want to do this. If you've never played guitar before, you can jump into learn. And even for me, as a guitarist, I could see pulling up like a scale or something along those lines in a song that I'm working on that I maybe don't have, let's say, a lead break figured out on or whatever. And it will light up all of the frets on all of the strings that fit that key. Then I could really kind of fake my way through it and only hit the things, you know, that are in that key, right? You could fake your way through it and feel like you're coming up with something. So I'm going to show
That's what I'm doing on this show today.
Exactly. Fake it till you make it. Yeah. That's what they say. So I'm going to show you how to create a scale here, or how to play a scale. You've never played guitar whatsoever. We've got sound, right? Okay. Right now it's just kind of doing the little flashy thing. But if I was to hit E on here. Let's go to E and E major. Sure. So I'm in E major. I'm only lighting up the first string, right? And what you can see there is if I wanted to do the E major scale, it's open to that fret, to that fret, to that fret. It lights every fret that makes up that scale. Okay. And you were playing around. I'm going to hand this to you.
I'm getting nervous.
Yeah.
I knew guitar was going to come this way.
We already talked earlier about how demos on TV never go as planned.
Put this on over here.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Arms
this here.
Is there.
Okay.
Here's a pick if that makes it easier.
This is
or
the coolest
maybe it doesn't,
look.
I don't
so let's
know.
Get a good shot right now. Okay.
This is the first time that Rich has played guitar.
That's the best I'll look for the rest of this segment. So okay.
Fine. All right. So if FretZealot was not on here, and I said, "Hey, Rich, why don't you play me an E major scale on the first string?" You'd be like,
I don't know.
You'd be like, big question mark over your forehead. But because you have FretZealot on here, you can play it. That this basically means finger off, okay, because this is like open. So first of all, play the open string, the first string open, which means no finger on it. Yep, and now follow the lights. Yeah, you skipped one, but that's okay.
Oh, I skipped one?
Yeah, that's all right.
I thought it sounded a little toony.
Hey, you did it. You did it. You did the, the E major
scale. I don't hear a lot of clapping in this room, so clearly...
Honestly,
day one may not impress your friends with this fret zealot, but maybe after a while.
Here's the deal, though. When it comes to something like learning guitar, if you've never played guitar before, if I was to sit down with you as an instructor and you were the student,
you'd be
I'd be like, let's do, you know, the first thing that we're going to do is an E major scale on the first string. There would still be a lot of confusion, right? Not having those lights there, it ends up looking like an infinite mass of lines on the fretboard, and you aren't going to know where to go. This at least gives you a direction. It gives you a guide to follow.
All right, give me Stairway to Heaven. Let me try it.
Okay, I'm sure it's in here, but I'm afraid to go into that section of the app. I want the app to continue working. All right, so you now know how to do a scale, and it's a pretty basic scale on the first string. Now we're going to do a chord. All right?
There's more?
This is where things get a little complicated, because a chord...
Do we have our first crash?
We have our first crash.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get resynced with Fret Zealot. It says crash detected. I'm not going to let them know. I always like to go to fun and put on random to see if it's resynced, which
it's
not.
Just to make sure.
So I'm going to go into the Bluetooth settings.
And I see the Bluetooth is not lit up now.
It was not lit up. There's my Fret Zealot. I'm going to activate that. It'll think, and then it'll most of the time tell me that we're connected, do random, and hey, we're getting little blinks on the guitar, so we're good. All right, so I'm going to go into the chord section and hope that it doesn't crash a second time. Oh, dear.
Ooh.
It wasn't doing this before. This is new.
Double crash.
Yeah, so...
All right, I guess I'll just play freestyle then.
as long as you stay... No, dang it, I'm not giving you the lights. Okay, now I'm able to go in, so let me try. I'm going to connect. Please let this work.
I think I sound better without the Fret Zealot. Is that pretty good? Are a lot of people able to do that?
You've got good strumming control, let's say. But I feel like we can make that chord even richer. Yay, we got in.
There we go.
Okay, are you getting the feed? You are. So we're going to do a very easy chord. It's E minor. So I'm going to dial up E minor. Now, as I do this, if you take a look, you'll see on the guitar that these strings are all open. And then these, lift your finger for a second. The blue is your pointer finger. The green is your middle finger. So put the blue on that string. Nope. Blue right there and the green right there. Basically, this is the fret that you're trying to push down on.
Oh, so it's got two. I see.
Yeah, so it's a little hard because they're close together.
It's a little trickier for sure. And now I strum those two?
Strum them all.
Oh.
Hey. All right.
That sounded really good.
Didn't that sound amazing? You're like almost Jimi Hendrix. If I switch this to major, see?
I just added that.
I know.
That was extra.
You're feeling the rhythm, though. You're feeling the music.
I'm feeling it.
All right, so
I'm
now you've got your pointer on the blue.
Okay.
Your ring finger on the green.
That doesn't go that way. Okay, there we go.
Oh, sorry. Let's see here. I'm trying to think how I do this. Middle ring pointer.
Middle ring pointer.
Here, I'm going to try and go like that.
Okay.
It's not easy. And then strum, maybe?
All of it?
Yeah. So that's it's kind of muting it a tiny bit, but I heard it in there. That's what makes it the major instead of the minor.
It's a little trickier.
It is, because you got three fingers.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the point, right? Is that prior to this, you'd never held a guitar in your hands.
No.
And some of the first things that you've ever done with a guitar were actual chords and actual scales instead of fumbling.
And I definitely see how if this was something you're doing on your own and you spent a lot of time, it is a great way to learn. And I'm sure it's not the first time people have learned this way, but it's a very good use of technology, especially that you can put it on any guitar.
Well, and that's kind of the beauty of it. There are learning guitars that have LEDs kind of installed into them. They're more expensive, although this is not inexpensive. It's $199.99, which... Let's be honest, if the app is going to be as kind of iffy as it is a lot to ask right now. I feel like it needs a lot of refinement on the app to really get the Bluetooth connection good, to get some of the aspects of the app. Like, It comes with a mount so that you can mount it in portrait, but then you go into certain sections of the app and suddenly it switches to landscape. And it's just weird, like when you're holding a guitar, to have to do those kind of motions, and it kind of gets a little inconvenient. But it is cool. It's nice. There's also a section called Lessons, which I won't go into entirely. But what this does, this brings in some videos that are that download as you use them. Justin Guitar is a he's on YouTube, and he does a lot of guitar instructions. But what they've done is they've taken all of his lessons, and they've actually cued it in a way that as you're watching, the things that he's fingering and everything appear on the guitar.
Oh, that's
so
smart.
If you're listening and following his instruction, you know where he actually is. So for a learning guitarist, I imagine the next time we have you on the new Screensavers, you will be almost like Jimi Hendrix.
I think so.
Okay. That's not too much to ask, is it?
No. I'll take this whole thing home. I just take this all?
No, yeah, totally. Okay, yes. Cool. It's yours. This,
and I will definitely practice.
Congratulations.
And my iPad as well.
I don't know if you want this iPad. You probably have a better one. This is a little old. But yeah, so that's Fret Zealot. What do you think?
I really think it's cool. I think here's the thing I'm trying to figure out. As a novice, would I think this is better, or, you know what I mean, would I be frustrated by this thing?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a really good question. I think it depends on what you're using it for. I, as you know, someone who's played a guitar for a very long time, trying to like learn the songs aspect, the play section of the app where it has the songs that you recognize and going in there.
Right.
There's something weird about the interface and how it connects with your brain that it's really hard to follow along. Even though technically it should be a really useful tool to see all the places on the neck that you put your fingers, but I feel like it just there's something missing there, and it's really hard to connect in the same way that it is when you sit down with like a book of tablature and you follow along that way. In some ways, though, I think it could really help. Like, it's really nice to be able to pull up a scale on all six strings and know these are the notes I can play and these are the notes I should stay away from.
Cool.
Kind of takes some of the thought out.
Yeah.
Of it, so.
I think it definitely has a place in the future of learning guitar,
sure.
I think.
Now, this is not like a live concert where at the end we destroy the guitar.
Oh, man.
So I'm going to take that from you and mount it over in my guitar stand. As fun as it would be to smash this over the set, I don't want to do that. Not this time, anyways.
All right. Fret Zealot.
Fret Zealot. I think you go to fretzealot.com, and you can order one for yourself. All right. Where are we? Oh, I know where we are. You ready to take a call?
Let's do it.
Call for help time. All right. We have on the line George from Youngstown, Ohio. How you doing, George?
What's up?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing all right. I think Rich is all warmed up now. I think he wanted to play lead breaks, but that's okay. We're going to answer your question and then maybe play a lead.
Okay, great.
Do you play the guitar? That's the first question here.
No, not at all.
Okay. Are you ready to? We're going to ship that guitar to you.
Don't say that.
Okay.
Don't say that. So, George, tell us a little bit about your question. You sent in a question, and it has to do with kind of phone recommendation advice. We'll see if we can help you out.
Sure. Little history on my phones. I started with a Nexus One back in the day and moved on to an S3, which I rooted and ran custom ROM on it, CyanogenMod, since I owned it, and had a Nexus 6P for a long time, which I've loved. But I ran into some battery problems. Now, Huawei replaced the battery once, and I came back again where it was dying about 1% a minute. So I thought, I'll give it my own try and try to change the battery myself. It all went great, and as I was closing it, I severed the wire in the back, so now the Nexus 6P is no more.
Tell me how you felt at that exact moment.
Well, it was terrible. The screen lit up, and I was so excited. I'm like, I did this, and then when I pushed it shut, it went away, and I could still feel the vibrations and hear it, but the screen was dead.
That's got to be bad.
So now I'm using an S5 with a bad USB port on the bottom, so I added wireless charging to it just to get by until I pick something up. I really liked that normal Android experience where you had no ads onto it, very bare minimum, just you could add what you wanted and tweak it how you wanted. And Android One almost feels like it's doing what the Nexus line used to do, and the Pixel's doing pure Android with Google on top of it. My wife has a Pixel One, loves it. Of course, it was very expensive when we bought it, and I'm wagering on going between the Nokia 6 and the next iteration of the Pixel. And there's probably a big price difference there. I'm on T-Mobile, so I'm looking for some advice on which direction I should go.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely two very different avenues, right? Like the Pixel 3, we don't really know much of anything about the Pixel 3. We know that Google is, you know, putting components into the next version of Android that will facilitate that wonderful word we keep hearing, a notch in the display. So it's very possible. More signs seem to be pointing to the possibility that the Pixel 3 is going to have a notch. Not that that sells phones, but maybe for some people it does. But no doubt about it, the Pixel 3, you're talking a premium smartphone, right? Like, you're not, they're not going to come out with the next generation of Pixel and be like, oh, now they're only $599. Like, they're just not going to do that.
No. But with the Pixel, you are getting, you know, everything that Google has to offer. You're getting the best that Google has to offer. You're comparing against the Nokia 6, is that what you mentioned? Which is kind of one of those Android One devices, which I don't really think this was meant for the States, right? Wasn't this kind of an international device?
That was initially. Initially, when Google, it was, it's only very recently that, that Google's kind of opened up Android One, and that, as you say, George, it really does seem like their new approach with Android One is that it's like the mid-range, you know, phone with minimal, you know, cruft, minimal extra, you know, stuff that you don't want on there.
You can get it at Best Buy $229. So, I mean, here's the thing. It really comes down to, what do you want out of your device? Do you want, is the camera the most important? Is the performance the most important? What's the biggest thing to you?
Probably performance, I guess. I'm a technology teacher, so I use it a lot in my classroom. Very often I'll cast from my phone to the screen, and that may be an issue on a mid-range device.
Yeah, I think that's where you're going to be. That's going to be tough on the, it's going to work, I think, on the Nokia, but this is not a spec'd out device, whereas the Pixel is pretty much a spec'd out device. It has the highest specs you can get for pretty much, I mean, besides like a Samsung device, but clearly you don't want that because that has a lot of stuff
other stuff.
Yeah, it's not the pure experience. How about this idea? What about getting your wife the new phone and you taking her phone?
I don't think she'll let it go. She got the nice one, 128 gigs on it, and it's never slowed down for her, and that was her problems in the past with the phones. She had a Note 2 before this, and that was kind of a nightmare for her.
That would like grind to a halt on random random times, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's something to be said for you both kind of being in the same, you know, on the same phone tangent.
Yeah. Or how would you? Wouldn't be able to tweet Team Pixel if you weren't on the same team. You know what I mean?
That's right. Of course.
I mean, they say families that tweet together. You know,
tweet together.
Personally, I'm a Pixel guy. As I have my iPhone here, but I love the Pixel. I think they are some of my favorite phones out there. Probably, I think it's the best Android phone available, even including the S9. And so, personally, I'm going to steer towards that at all costs. So, I mean, if you want the best that's out there, Pixel 3 is going to be... I'm not really sure what they're going to add. You know, the gesture support, clearly we're going to probably get something like that in the notch, which I'm not really excited about. But at the same time, maybe you wait for the Pixel 3 to drop and then you go with the Pixel 2. And then you save some money.
Oh, yeah, you'd save some money.
Because the price usually comes down.
Yeah, and you still get some of the benefits, you know, with like the unlimited photo uploads and, you know, all of the updates and everything. Because I think what I keep going back to as we're talking is if your priority is performance, like if that's like your number one stated priority, then I think you have to go with the Pixel over the Nokia 6. There might be other phones out there that maybe are also included on that list, but between these two that you have mentioned, the Pixel wins hands down. The Nokia 6, you know, is running a Snapdragon 630 processor, 3 or 4 gigs of RAM, and you mentioned that, you know, there was a possibility that you get the 4 gig of RAM version in the U.S. I saw it on Amazon. It's the international version, but that means that it's unlocked and it would work with your carrier for $309. You could totally do that. It would probably be good in a lot of different ways. But if you, what you're talking about is I need, absolutely have to have top, you know, top level performance, then, I mean, between those two, you have to go Pixel as far as I'm concerned.
And does the Android One get the updates at the same rate? Is it, you know, I mean, plus, does it have all the features that the Pixel would have?
So it doesn't have a lot of the software features because the Pixel, you know, like you said, the Android One stuff is almost like vanilla Android, right? Pixel is Google's Android, which is actually different. Pixel is like Google's Samsung device, if that makes sense. They've added extra stuff into the launcher that's different from the standard stock Android launcher, and they're extra features, and they're really cool, but it's an extension of the standard version of Android. So if that's a priority, then maybe the Nokia is the right way to go, because Android One really is closer to stock and doesn't have some of those bells and whistles.
I haven't personally used the Android One device, so I just don't know about the quality and the speed of that device. Like, I would hate for you to get that phone and then you get it home and, like, literally as you're installing your apps, you're noticing little hiccups here, little kind of frame drops, that kind of stuff, and you're just, like, getting frustrated from day one, knowing that this is sort of an underpowered device. Don't forget, you're going to be running modern apps on a device that might not be equipped to handle those apps. When you're in these emerging countries with these emerging markets that this is meant for, they're using things like a light version of Facebook or a light version of Facebook Messenger. You're going to be installing probably the real versions of these apps. So that could also take a toll on the performance. And you mentioned that's the number one feature that you like.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help.
So where's your head at? What are you thinking? Are you leaning for the Pixel at this point?
See what the Pixel 3 is, and then if it's not what I need, maybe go for the Pixel 2 instead.
Are you cool waiting until that day? Because, I mean, you're probably going to be waiting 4 or 5 months at least until you know.
The Nexus One still fires up, so I might always use that again.
No, yeah, think of this as like an exercise of reliving your phones of Christmas past.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I hope that's helpful, and we really appreciate you calling in and being part of today's show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, George.
All right, take care. Best of luck. We have a whole lot coming up, but I should tell you a little bit about next week's show. Patrick Norton and Father Robert Ballesteire are going to be standing in these spots. Neither of them are going to be playing guitar, unfortunately, as far as I know, anyways. If you want them to answer your tech questions, here's how you do it.
Need tech help? The New Screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
All right, we're taking the light theme that we have going today, and we're cranking it up to 11. Megan Maroney has some fancy modular lights, smart lights, to show us called the Nanoleaf. Let's check it out.
In an effort to find everything under the sun that could make my home smarter, I recently stumbled upon Nanoleaf. It's a company that makes smart lights. If by smart, you mean cool. And I do, because we all know that smart is cool. Nanoleaf sent us this light panel starter kit, and it was incredibly easy to set up, which is not often the case with many smart lights or other IoT devices that I've tried. You simply download the app, unbox the triangular panels, and snap them together in the shape you want. Pair the panels to your phone and then turn them off or on, then choose colors and designs all with an app. You can select designs from Nanoleaf or download color combinations designed by the Nanoleaf community. Nanoleaf also sent us the rhythm module, which will let you sync your lights to the music. This was also super easy to set up. Just plug the Nanoleaf rhythm into any free panel port, wait for the indicator light to stop blinking, press the center triangle to turn the rhythm on, press it again to change the music scene. You can also talk to the panels or play music to them. You can customize and create your own music scenes in the app. And let's be honest, part of the fun of a smart home is wowing all your friends and family when they come over. You can not only control the light panels with your app, Nanoleaf also supports HomeKit, Amazon Echo, and Google Assistant, so you can use your voice to start your dance party. Siri, turn on my romantic scene.
Okay, your scene is set.
Siri, turn on my forest theme.
Forest, sure.
Siri, turn on my Vader theme.
Vader, you got it.
Siri, turn on my Stranger Things theme.
Stranger Things, coming up.
The only real downside to the Nanoleaf is the price. The starter kit with the Rhythm Edition costs $229.99. Now, if you think of this as a piece of art for your wall, then $229 is not that much. But if you think of it as a cool toy you'll occasionally bring out for parties when you remember, then $299 is a lot. I'm also not a huge fan of the shape of the panels. I guess you could say they're not exactly my design aesthetic. I'm looking forward to the square panels that are coming soon.
$299?
That's a lot, but those any sort of smart light is expensive, even the light bulb. So, I mean...
I suppose so. I mean, those panels are really cool. Never in a million years did I think that that whole kit would be $299. I guess, you know, LEDs, like, I just think LEDs are inexpensive, but, I mean, Fret Zealot, same deal, right?
Yeah.
Like, and the majority of it is a strip of LED lights, smart, don't get me wrong, but still pretty expensive for what you get.
Yeah, I think the price will come down on something like that in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we'll find out. I think it's time to read some mail. And apparently we have a mailbox to do that from. Thank you, Mr. Mailbox Man. Last week there was nothing special in here. Just thought I'd point that out. You shouldn't have. Who is this? I'll be completely honest. I had no idea this was in there. Oh, it's an album. Is this yours, Alex? Oh, it's John's. John, Selenina, you're the best. Thank you. There we go. There's my
album. Is he returning that to sender? I don't know.
He's like, you know what? I don't want this.
That's the first return from your Kickstarter.
John, your CD's in the mail. Here we go. All right, cool. I was not expecting that.
Mixed messages in the mailbag, too.
Actually, here. Go ahead and pick.
All right, let's see. It's like a magic trick. I think you made me pick this one.
Yes. It's the king of spades. No. Okay, I have email one. I'll go ahead and read it first. This is from Debbie, and she says, I work at a community college where many students have limited incomes and have bought cheaper iPhone and Android phones and are running out of memory. I think memory storage, I think, is the way this is here. Many thought they could simply stash all their data in the cloud, but apps want to download the data to local storage, making cloud storage less useful than one would think. What are your top tips for someone who needs to get work done on the phone that they have? What are the top apps for thrifty memory usage? And so this one, I feel like, is a little bit of a challenge because I understand, like, there are Android devices out there, Android is as one example, that have, like, 8 gigs of internal storage, which is insanely low.
Yeah, that's really... I mean, you're basically filling that with the operating system.
Yeah.
As soon as you install 3 apps, it's
right.
Taken up.
Yeah, so, you know, those are apps that, like, at most, you're getting this phone to do the core things that you need to do. Browse the internet, you know, browse websites, phones, text, that sort of stuff.
Upload to Instagram.
Maybe.
Just the basics.
Yes. Some people would consider that part of the basics. So from my perspective, what you probably need if you're dealing with limited storage on a device is you need some way to manage the storage because there's little way to change the behavior. If you're storing all of your documents in the cloud and you need to use those on your device, the way, you know, often the way they do that is they download it to your device and that occupies storage space on your device. So how do you go about that? There are apps on Android, I'll start with Android first, that allow you to jump into your storage and smartly, intelligently, pick out and remove things from your device that you really don't need. The app that I'm thinking of is actually a Google app. It's called Files Go.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows you to do this. You're able to analyze your device and remove duplicate files. It takes a look at apps that you may have installed but haven't used in a really long time. It says, why is this taking up space? It removes the app, leaves the data there so you don't lose that, but it removes the app. Just a lot of smart ways to clean up your storage.
Do you have this on your phone? Do you have this installed?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, it'll notify you, too. It'll be like, hey, this stuff is taking up a bunch of storage. A couple things I'd throw in is... Google Photos is kind of a necessity if you have no storage on your device. And there's also, if you kind of hard press it, you know, you get the little options.
Mm-hmm.
You can just do free up space, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a phone with a little bit of storage, you're going to have to do that all the time because as soon as you take a couple pictures, you want to do that. I actually like an app called HTC Boost Plus. Now, I know I'm not going to recommend like the clean masters of the world, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, so I
like
know exactly
you install
what you
them, and it's just like your phone is like it's downhill spiral. But I find that the HTC Boost Plus actually works.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of like the Files Go, and it does scan all your stuff for the memory and stuff, but it does a good job of like clearing out some of the memory in a non-evasive way where it's not just like going crazy and sending you malware and spam ads all the time.
That's
I find
good.
That it's pretty much legit.
And it's an HTC app?
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm trying to figure out when the last time it was updated, but I usually use this on my Android devices. Look, it gets good ratings.
Yeah.
And it's from HTC. Let's see, when was the last updated?
April 25th, 2018.
So they're still updating it, which is nice. And I just find that all those other ones, like I said, look at the one on the side, the Clean Master and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Don't stay away from those. Anything with a brush, a little sweepy brush, don't download to your phone, please.
Very good. And Waikiki Guru in chat says Boost Plus does a great job on HTC phones as well, so backing that up. As far as iOS is concerned, I think what I found here, now I'm not a regular iOS user, but I didn't know this about iOS. If you go into settings and general and storage, you're able to manage your storage space, as you would imagine. But there's something in there called offload unused apps function, and it automatically does this when your storage is low. So kind of what I was trying to find on iOS is some sort of automatic way to help you, guide you in that direction. And it seems like this is what it does. It deletes the app itself, but not the app data to make room. And when that happens automatically, the icon is still left on your screen, but it's faded out. So you know that it's not existing on your device at that moment in time, but that you can get it back if you need to.
So there's going to be, if you need that app in the future, there's going to be a little time where you have to tap it and download it
and re-download
and kind of like get it to reinstall, but the data's all there,
right?
And that's a newer feature. I believe that's kind of when they revamped iOS. There you go. One thing I would add to this is in your photos. This, a lot of times people don't have the optimize photos enabled under your settings in your photos app.
Okay.
So what happens,
what does
is
that do?
Well, if you have iCloud enabled, you're kind of, it's like, you know, all your photos are residing on your phone. But if you don't have optimized iPhone storage turned on, it's keeping all the full res on your phone. If you have that turned on, it'll upload them to the cloud, and then it'll manage, if it's saying like, oh, why are these photos taking up half the space? Let's offload, you know, some of the,
oh, man.
And you'll have basically thumbnails on your phone. When you tap one, then it downloads it for the full
res. That's really nice.
Yeah. But you have to have that turned on. So, and I'm not sure if Apple turns it on by default or you have to. But I'll usually show people that if they're like, why am I phone out of storage, you know?
That sounds like
Make
a
sure
really good
on.
Tip there. Yeah, I didn't even know about that. Awesome. Hopefully that helps. All right, what's the next one?
Oh, that's my
turn. You got it.
Question. Here we go. I am looking forward to buying the new Moto G6 in the near future, but I wonder if there's an easy way to move Google Authenticator to it. I have four accounts which use two-factor authentication. Thanks.
Do you use two-factor apps?
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to. I mean, I always recommend that you do. I personally use Authy.
I do too.
Which I think is it's way easier to move between phones because it's set up for that. I don't even know if you can do that with Google Authenticator.
So you can. And I was under the impression in my mind that when I first read this email that you couldn't, or I just hadn't heard how. And back when I started my whole two-factor switch a while back, a couple of years ago at this point, I had started with Authenticator, and then I saw the light with Authy, and I haven't turned back. Authy makes it really easy to switch from device to device. You just kind of install it on the new device, log in with your standard authentication with the passwords, given you can remember the password. That's the challenge because you don't enter it very much.
Yes, definitely. That is the big thing about Authy is you have a backup password that you need to remember.
Yeah, you really need to remember.
And just make it something easy.
Yeah, it will give you little... Yeah, no. Sorry. That flew right over my head. Make it recallable enough because you don't enter it in all the time, but it's your oh no, what have I done password to get it all back when you really mess things up. Thankfully you don't mess things up if you plan accordingly. But you're not on Authy. So that's like our plug for Authy, I suppose. however, with Authenticator, it is possible to do this. You have to jump through a little bit more hoops. It's not set up for this inside the app. You install Authenticator on your new device. Then you go into a browser on a desktop, let's say, log into your Google account and go to the two-step verification page within your Google account. Within there, you're going to find an Authenticator section with a little pencil next to it. You tap that pencil to edit, and you want to select change phones. So you're basically telling your Google account, I'm going to a new phone with my Authenticator app. You should be presented with a QR code on the screen because that's how Authenticator does things, is with a QR code that you then, on the new device in the Authenticator app, scan that QR code, and then you're going to have to authenticate with the two-factor code that's given. But once you do that, you're in. Your Google account is then tied to this new phone with Authenticator, but you're not done.
Okay.
You still have to go into the apps that were associated with the old Authenticator app and do the QR code process there as well. So you're basically bringing them over manually. So I guess that's how you switch devices. There is no automatic way to say, I've switched devices and they all come with me. You're still kind of doing some of the heavy lifting. And that ends up being why I use Authy. Because I use so many different devices, that would be a real big pain if I had to do that every time.
I don't really understand what the benefit of that is, though. Because if you're moving everything over and you're scanning the QR codes again, then you're not. It's nothing is really kind of coming over.
No, but it is telling your Google account, and you may not realize that Google does it this way. It is telling your Google account that your Authenticator app exists on this device and not that device now. Okay. And to look over here instead of there. So there is a little bit of a process switching from device. But you're right. It's not nearly as automatic. Once you do that, you still kind of have to do some work with the individual sites that you're using.
But to the defense of the work, I will say it feels like you're being really secure because you're putting so much effort in.
Absolutely.
That you're just like, all right, this is better be the most secure thing because you do have to go through a lot of hoops. It's not just like, you know, Authy almost makes me feel sometimes that it's too simple. And I'm just like, wait, why is this so easy, you know?
That's kind of the common thought around security is that, you know, if it's easy, then it's inherently less secure.
Right.
So Authy does make that a little bit easier. But, you know, what are you giving up in that process? Maybe you're okay with that, maybe you're not. And that's what you kind of have to come up with on your own. So,
but two-factor, good to have on. So
absolutely.
That was a great question, by the way. That's a very meaty question.
Absolutely. Two-factor is a really good idea. If you're not set up on it, definitely look it up and go into it. Just don't mess it up quite like I did on This Week in Google a couple of years ago. I locked myself out of my Google account.
Oh, that would not be good.
Thankfully, somebody watching the show that works at Google was able to get me back in. But there were a couple of days where I was pretty certain I had like lost my account forever. That happens, you look inward and you realize just how much you depend on these services to work, and you realize what you lose if they don't. So, some lessons to be learned.
Wow.
Rich DiMuro, this was a lot of fun.
This was fun.
As it was last time, it was even more fun this time, and hopefully next time
you
can teach me how to play guitar.
I think I will. By the time I practice, I'm usually here like every 6 months or so, or like once a year. So
see,
I think
got a lot of time.
I've got some time to practice. So.
Right on, Rich. What do you want to leave people with? What do you want people to know about all the cool stuff you're doing when you're here?
My website, richontech.tv. You know, if you're in LA, you can watch me on KTLA. If you're on a bunch of different cities, I'm on. I do like a tech segment for a bunch of different cities across America, so you can watch in like Cleveland, Chicago. All over the place. But there's my website, so you can go there. I've got a podcast, Rich on Tech.
Nice.
So you can listen to that every day. You can see links to what I talk about. And I just, you know, my thing is I just like to make tech fun. And if something's happening in the world, you know, help you solve your problems when it comes to tech, like, you know, the Gmail revamp that just happened, you know, kind of explaining. Are you loving that, by the way?
You know, I'm an inbox user.
So I have
switched one of my computers to Gmail so that I'm living in it and everything. Yeah. And I like the changes, but I work better in inbox than I do.
Interesting.
If you
okay.
Yeah.
I'm a new Gmail guy.
What do you mean?
That's the new Gmail.
Oh, I thought you just switched over to Gmail. I was like, how did that
even
happen?
Gmail. No, it's only been a week, but I'm like, I'm fully in.
I was like, what were you on, Yahoo? No. Okay, now I understand.
No judgment, though. If you are, look, if you're an AOL, it's fine.
It's great.
You know,
great.
I've been trying to get my mom off of AOL now for like 16 years, you know?
It works for
her. At least she's not paying for the service anymore like she was like 6 months ago.
Right. Wow. Okay.
You know, you don't have to pay that anymore.
Rich, this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason.
Yep. Really appreciate it. And you can find me, well, I'm all over the Twit network these days, twit.tv, you know, Tech News Weekly, all about Android. Do triangulation from time to time, and I get to hop in here. Oh, know how, and I get to hop in here and do new screensavers every once in a while. Having a lot of fun. So thank you. You know, yellowgoldmusic.com if you want to find that album. But twit.tv for everything else that I do in my life. Twit has a newsletter, by the way. If you want to subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to twit.tv/newsletter. You're going to get news, information about our shows that are publishing. We do a kind of a weekly promo with some clips of some of the best moments from throughout the week. Go to twit.tv/newsletter and you will not miss an announcement on future shows, things that we have coming up. And we're about to enter a very busy time with some live events like Google I.O. and a bunch of other stuff. So subscribe and you won't miss it. Also, you can subscribe to this show, twit.tv/NSS for new screensavers. Find us on YouTube. We're at youtube.com/thenewscreensavers. And you can send us an email if you want to be a part of the show. That's newscreensavers@twit.tv. I think I've covered all the bases now, and we really appreciate you guys joining us each and every week. And thanks to everyone who came and watched in the audience, and really appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all very soon on the new Screensavers. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.